Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2017 Home Education Conference, held in Logan, Utah.
Abundant education, small budget. I know in my own personal life, there are times when it seems like we have the excess and the bonus that we can just, I love the years when I can buy whatever I want. I'm like, my wish list is this long and my budget is maybe this long. And those are the years that I stock up, but that's more an exception than the rule. We have bills that pay, we have medical emergencies that have to be taken care of. The car breaks down, the water heater cracks and leaks all over the floor. The heat stops heating and your kids call you while you're in Las Vegas. It's cold in here. Those sort of things. And that can limit what we spend on education. And so I wanted to spend a little bit of time and talk about tips that I have used. This is my 9th year homeschooling. I think it's my 9th. Might be 10th. I don't know. I've lost track. But things that I have learned over the years to help me have the resources that I need without breaking the bank. So, number one, and my handout is on page 155. So a lot of it's on there, but I'm going to be asking you some questions, and you might want to think about it a little bit and then fill in what comes to your mind. The number one is prioritize. What is your one thing? What is your one subject? What is your one concern or the one thing that is most important for your homeschool? For one of my children, it was math, and it was their math curriculum. And I had found a math curriculum that worked fabulously with this one child. And it seems like sometimes when you find that magic bullet, it's not cheap. And so that created a situation where I had to figure out where is the money coming from. If I can prioritize what my one thing is, then I know that if my homeschool budget is this big, that is where the bulk of my money, or sometimes even all my money, is going to go, is to that one thing that's prioritized. As I mentioned, for the one kid, it was math. I have done things like, for example, because we don't follow a standard school year, especially in subjects like math, we'll just start it. And he works through it, and he works through it, and works through it. When I notice, I'll kind of watch his progress. When I notice that we're about maybe a little more than halfway through the book, at that point, I need to be thinking, I need to be able to purchase the next level because I don't know it. And if I'm thinking about that when he's halfway through this one, then that gives me many, many, many weeks to figure out how I'm paying for it. Versus, it's a brand new school year and I need all new curriculum and where am I going to come up with it? So that is because that's our priority. I think about it early and then I can start to sit there and say, from the budget, how much can I pull out this pay period to go towards the math curriculum that I'm going to have to buy in 4 months? And if the math curriculum costs me $200 and I've got 4 months to save up for it, it becomes less daunting. So if you're needing to stay within a budget, figure out what your one thing is so that you can prioritize where that budget's going to come from. So the other thing I have learned that if I want to spend less money, then that means I have to spend it in time. It's fabulous to be able to buy a curriculum right out of the box. But it is expensive. And so I have to decide, and this is kind of going years as well. Last year, I had a baby. And so I knew that my time, the amount of time I was able to spend was going to be less. And so that meant that I was going to need to spend more money on certain things. I had 9 months to prepare for that. But at the same time, I don't like to spend a lot of money on things. So I can look at something and I can say, I want to, like math curriculum, or not math curriculum, math manipulatives. I can make math manipulatives. They're not as pretty as the ones you buy, but I can make it. But that requires time on my part. So if I'm going to spend less money, then I make sure in my schedule to schedule, or I make sure to schedule more time so that I can create, make, hunt for, search what I'm looking for. So the other thing that I wanted to use as an example for that is my family loves literature-based curriculums. I have boys, they don't really want to color, they don't really want to draw, they want to do what we're going to do and move on. But I have found that both of them are voracious readers. And so they will happily read and talk about a book or do an activity from a book. So we love, 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 love stories. And I found that we can sit outside in the hammock and I can do read alouds with them. And because we're outside, they're fully engaged in that. So for me, for my family, with it being a curriculum-based or our literature-based curriculum, I like to use prepackaged curriculums as a guide. Like I mentioned, I had a baby last year, so I just purchased the curriculum. And the books came and the guide came. But most years I don't do that because I have more time. And so I'm using this one as an example. This is the Bookshark catalog. And what I might do is I'd sit there and I would look and I'd say, okay, here is the full grade package for Level 5. And I would look at, it looks like they're studying Eastern Hemisphere for history, and they have their list of books there. So what I would do is if I loved what they were doing here, I would look at it and I would say, all right, there's all of these fabulous books. Let me look at the book list. And wow, I already own this one, and I own this one, and I own this one. So I'm going to highlight that these are books that I already own. Then I would look at the other books that they have, and I would check my library. What books on this list are available at my local library? And make note of that. This is part of my planning process. This is what we're studying. Here's their list of books. These are books that I own. These are books that I can get at my local library. And so that usually will leave a portion of books that I couldn't find at my library. And at that point, I have to make a decision. Do I buy those books? Or do I find a book at the library that is similar to replace it with? Or do I just decide, you know what, we're already reading three other books about that topic. I don't need that book. We can just move along. With curriculums like this, it'll come up with a guide that you're going to, on week one, you'll read this book and this book and this book. And on week two, you're going to read these chapters of this book. And you'll go on. That's also where the time factor comes in, is if I'm doing this on my own, then once I've identified the books that we're going to use for the year, or if I'm going to do a replacement book, then I can say, we're doing school for this many weeks, and so in order to do all of these, then this week we need to do this, and this week we need to do this, and this week we need to do that. Other times when I've had a little bit more money in my budget, I may buy the guide that says when you're reading things, but not all of the other supplies. That way I don't have to come up with the schedule. It's just somebody's already thought that all through for me, and I can just plug in the resources based on that. So that would kind of be my second, or the other thing that I want to stress is I've used this curriculum as an example. You don't have to use a literature-based curriculum. You can look at whatever curriculum you want to do and pick it apart and see how does it work, why are they choosing the resources that they do. And then that way you can kind of build it on your own. If money is tight, remember, extracurriculars are extra. Your child does not have to do the extras to have a successful education. So there are times where my kids get to do extras, and there are other times that they don't get to. If there are extras that you'd love to do, that's a great thing to ask grandparents for as a gift. Say, you know, so-and-so would really like to do this camp that learns this. maybe instead of that for Christmas, they could, you could, maybe that might be an example. My parents have given us memberships and stuff for things for Christmas, and my kids have enjoyed it, or a large piece of equipment for Christmas. The other thing I would say is think outside the box. On years that we have been extremely tight, I will think, do I have something? Can I reuse something that I've already had? I have a whole big section of books for American history, and I finally realized a couple of years ago that my youngest was like 3 when we did that. And I was like, oh, well, then we should study American history this year, because then I don't have to buy something new. I already have it. We can work through that. Do you have something that you haven't used yet? Because I think all of us are a little, have a habit of going, oh, that's so neat, and we buy it, and then we go home, and we don't use it, and it sits on the shelf. So maybe it wasn't my plan to study chemistry this year, but I found a I have a chemistry book on the shelf that we've never used. So that's what we're going to do. Can you borrow? As I said, lots of, especially if they've been homeschooling for many years, will have curriculum on their shelf. Borrow. Ask the experienced homeschoolers in your community, do you have something like this that maybe I could look at or use for a couple weeks? And most of them are happy to share with you. Use programs that are already in place. One of my favorite things for activities like history and science type subjects, or even kind of those extracurriculars, because I have boys, is the Boy Scout Merit Badge Program. Those merit badge books have outstanding basic information about that subject, and then you can get the worksheets online. And so if we want to study a certain topic, sometimes if I don't have a curriculum in place, I'll just go look online and I'll say, do they have a merit badge for this? Because then he can work through the merit badge worksheet, and he can work through the book, and he can do the projects, and he's gotten a great education about that topic. So use Scouts, Young Women's, anything else, that other activities that they may be doing, and just incorporate that as part of your school day. And the last one I had on there was a year of exploration. There have been some times where I can say, these are the core subjects we're doing and what I'm paying for, and then the rest is almost kind of like a free-for-all. We're going to study nature sciences this year, and so we might spend a lot more time outside doing exploratory subjects instead of reading about it, or we'll go read about it because we've discovered it. So don't get tied into the idea that all curriculum has to be purchased. On here, I put a couple of budget-friendly resources. One of them was the Boy Scout Merit Badge books. Homeschool Share, they're great for unit studies, lap booking, that type of thing. That will kind of give you, sometimes you can get book lists there. Don't tie yourself to those books. If you can't find that book, don't feel like you have to buy that book. Just find another book. One time I couldn't find a book, so I went to the library and checked out 10 other books about that topic, and we figured out which one we liked. So, and then, as I mentioned, we like literature-based curriculums. I've done Sunlight. Bookshark is a sister company of Sunlight. That was one I was showing you. But also there's a guesthollow.org. She does that similar type of literature-based curriculum. It was free for many years. I've noticed when I was on her site a little while ago, she started charging for some of them, but some of the plans are still free. And it's more of an outline. She's not sending you the book. She'll just say, if you want to study American history, these are recommended books, and here's a weekly schedule to use it. So I found that that is a great alternative, where she has created the plan, and I just have to find the resources or use resources I have. So I think I'm out of time. So I'm going to turn the time over to Angela.
Okie dokie. I know this is not the most exciting dynamic class ever, and I get that. I really do. But I just, for everybody who's here, just right before I start to talk, I just want for all of you to recognize yourselves for what a large role you play in changing what you can do in your homeschool. Because I know a lot of times we don't generate the funds that are used in homeschool, but the way that we steward those funds and how hard we work to save that money, that stretches, and that stretching is also stretching our kids' opportunities. So give yourself a nice little pat on the back for that. When you start out doing your homeschool year, I don't know how everybody else plans this, but there's usually some type of time that we spend planning what we're going to do the following year. And for me, you just need to be really clear on your intentions of what you're going to do for that year. What do you want out of homeschooling? There are a lot of ways to homeschool, and there are a lot of people that have different ways to homeschool, but you want to make sure that it's your homeschool. Okay, so right in the very beginning, you can spend a whole lot of money on a whole lot of stuff, and if it doesn't match the intentions that you have for your homeschool, you're gonna maybe have wasted a whole lot of money on a whole lot of stuff. And anybody who's purchased curriculum, especially if you purchase it new, knows you can almost never get the same amount of money out of it as you paid for it. So, you know, you have that meeting with your spouse or with your child, and then you pray about it and decide, does this match our intentions? Then don't spend any more than you need to cover your intentions. Once you know what you want to do, then you can just look at it and go, we're covered. There are many lovely, shiny, wonderful things, and I'm sure I could spend an insane amount of money upstairs, and none of it would be bad. All of it would be fabulous, but my pocketbook would scream at me when I went to pay my bills later. So once it's covered, you know, go with it. Ooh, realistic expectations. This was a big one for me. I always have that idea in my head about what the perfect homeschool is. And perfect has sort of become a four-letter word for me, simply because once you reach perfectionism, like, I don't know, your life is just nuts because it's impossible to achieve that. So go with what you know your family can do. Go with what you know isn't going to overstress everybody. And then this is a huge one, especially if you have a special needs child in your home like we do. You've got to know the learning style of your child. And if you have two children or three children that happen to be in the same camp, that might be a good place for you to make an investment. Because even if you're not going to reuse it right the next year, if that's the learning style that your child has, then you're going to save yourself some on the go around. Mini co-op. This is one of my favorite ones. I'll be honest with you right now, I never got it up to four moms. That was the idea, is to have four moms participate, and then if you don't want to do big, you know, great. Have your group be small. And we did. We only ever got it up to three moms because, like, someone would have a baby or, you know, you get diagnosed with Lyme disease or whatever it is. And so you don't end up with always the four moms. Or maybe you don't want 4 weeks. Maybe you want a week off. You don't want to do something every week. But that works out really well. You teach what you want. You teach what you're good at. And don't make it like a huge pressure-y situation. Just enjoy what you teach. You're much more likely to keep doing it throughout the school year if you enjoy what you teach. Okay, this one is a big one. Our co-op puts on a curriculum sale / swap every year. We just get together, the same lady hosts it every year, and you just get together and you price things almost like a garage sale, or you can code things, you know, like this is a green sticker, or this is a whatever, and then everything the other person codes in that color, you can take something over and try to swap with them for the thing in that category. You know, like if they deem it, this is worth this much to me, or this is in this category, like I'm needing this, then you just kind of swap with whatever they're wanting to swap. On this list here, there are a list of websites that I get used curriculum. If the swap thing doesn't work for you, or you don't have a large group of homeschoolers in your area, like that, let's say Craigslist things, then on your handout, my handout is page 151 for anybody who wants to follow. I've listed a lot of websites for places that you can get things for free or much, much reduced. Okay, I don't know if this is this way in your house, but math. Math is where we invest the most in our homeschool. English I can do, my child really loves history, you know, I wasn't super grand at math, and so that's where we get the biggest bang for our buck. And here's my criteria before I make the purchase. Obviously, it needs to be affordable for you, but secondary to that is, will this save us time? Part of the reasoning for that is, as she mentioned before, when you're swapping something for time, if you're going to invest a decent amount of money in something, it really needs to save you time. Because if you've only got the money to invest in one or two places, you need that time to invest in the other subjects. Will this save us stress? If it's not going to save you stress, I would really think twice about purchasing it. Can we reuse it? Obviously, it goes kind of with the learning style thing. If this will work for another child because they have the same learning style, awesome. Then how large of a need does it fill? Every mom knows this. Every mom can do kind of the survey of the school year or of their child, and maybe one child has a need in a larger area than another child. And it's just one of those. It helps you to prioritize what you're doing with your money. Okay, here's one of my faves. Before you buy, ask a friend. There are a lot of ways to get reviews online for things, and I definitely recommend that. But obviously, if there's a friend that you trust, that's one of my favorite go-tos. Because you know that it's not some flowery embellishment. You know that they haven't been paid for their review, and that what they're saying to you is going to be legit, and you're going to be able to use that. There's our online reviews. I try always to do three, but sometimes, like if it's an older product or a little bit of an obscure something, I can't find three, so then I like to go for two. Trials and samples, yay. There are places like Homeschool Buyers Co-op will help you find a lot of the different places for trials. You can just go to their page, and they have a section that will show people that are free or people that offer trials. If you sign up for their emails, I know, annoying, but they'll send you things that say so-and-so has a free trial, you know, on this. And that way you at least know where you are before you attempt to purchase something. And again, the borrow or try it out before you purchase. I know sometimes with our homeschool stuff, we get a little worried to lend because you worry what will happen to it or you know, things like that. Just try to remember when you were in the phase. And if someone knows that they're, you know, really just going to be returning it, then it's usually not as bad. Pray about it. The brochure will look fabulous. Your friend might say it's fabulous. But definitely, definitely pray about it. Okay, free sources. Free sources are my favorite. It's kind of what I do. There are many, many, literally thousands of books in what they call the public domain. I don't know if anybody else is familiar with that, but you can download thousands, I kid you not, of books in the public domain. All of the resources are going to be in the handout. I named specific websites. We don't have time to go over them right now, but they're all in there. We've found it's not just classics. You can find textbooks, you can find magazines, you can find newspapers for like your current event stuff. And then I love the take with, because when you're busy or like if you only have one PC in your home or if you're not the homeschooler that has the school room and you're homeschooling all over the house, then it's great to be able to download them instead of having to be tethered to your one spot. They're going to be on the... this one we're going to zoom through. YouTube is one of my favorite resources for homeschooling, but it is full of scariness if you're not very careful. There's an article on my website about how to do this. I'm toying with the idea of a how-to video because not everybody is super tech savvy or loves the whole computer thing. But there are several things that you can do in YouTube to make things easier. Like, it'll shut off the comments. It won't replay the next video. Restricted mode is not the best thing, but it's better than not having it on, and I use the ad blocker, because then you don't have this whole plethora of things on the side that are commercial whatnots. Also, there's a list of clean screen sites that will literally filter things for you. Little things lead to big learning. Don't sell yourself short. Don't sell your day short. The things that you do with your kids, the things that you do with your husband, you know, your child can go learn how to change oil or change a tire or bake some cookies or braid some hair. None of this is unimportant. It's all learning. My favorite way to save money on curriculum is unit studies. I don't know if anybody here is familiar with unit studies. The way that we do them, we use history as a spine, and then we add in whatever is there for art in that time period, you know, the artists and whoever, whatever music is there for that time period. And that way you are covering a ton of subjects in one day, including history, which you kind of have to cover. And I say in the beginning, and I say in the end, you have got this. I'm a person who has trouble with my confidence. I'm super scared to death to get up here and talk at all. But you can do it. The Lord gave you these children for a reason. You know them. You know how they learn. You know how to teach them. You do. You've got everything you need to teach your kids and give them not just a little bit of maybe what someone else thinks is good enough, but broad, wonderful, abundant education.
So when my husband and I were dating, I told him that I wanted to have at least 12 kids. He looked at me and his response was, "Well, I remember my dad sitting and snapping pencils as he did budgeting, and we had 5 kids. So if you can figure out a way to make it work financially, I'm good with it. Go for it." And then I had some kids, and my oldest is kindergarten, and I said, "I think I want to homeschool." And he's like, "So how are we going to afford it?" I said, "It's okay." I had known that with having 12 kids, if it was Heavenly Father's desire for our family, he could help stretch the money, and I felt like with homeschooling, he can stretch the money. Financial concerns are not outside of Heavenly Father's ability. And then my husband said, "Well, are they going to miss out on everything fun? What about piano and sports and all of the things that they get for free at school?" And so I started praying and started researching, and I was led to virtual charter schools. And that's what I have used to make education incredibly affordable for my family, because it doesn't hit my regular budget for most of the things we buy. I look at the virtual charter schools as my part-time job that I jump through to provide the extras for my kids. You have to be willing to jump through the hoops and view it as a part-time job, because it does take time. And you have to be willing to be able to set that aside from your real learning sometimes and say, "This is what I do to provide this." My kids know the hoops they jump through. Well, those hoops provide your piano lessons, they provide gymnastics, they provide horseback riding. I couldn't afford all of those things for each of you without jumping through some hoops. It's not a one-size-fits-all. This past year, I used 3 different virtual charter schools in Idaho to fit the needs of my kids. Some charter schools are very hands-off, give you a lot of freedom to do what you want. Others are more like public school at home or offer a lot of advanced challenges and classes. And there's kind of a continuum of what is out there and what works best. And you have to look at your personality, what are you willing to do, what works for you, and what works for each kid. I had 2 sixth graders that one thrives with advanced challenges and one shuts down. 2 different schools, 2 different programs, they were working on different things which didn't discourage the one and allowed the other to still feel like she can move ahead. The options vary by state. Utah has a lot of different options. In Idaho, I've used IDEA and Harmony and Richard McKenna. When you look at a virtual charter school, I always tell people to start with the end in mind. If you've never done that type of system before, find out what would happen if you decide it's not a good fit and drop out. You don't want to sign up and be bought into something that then it's impossible for you to get out of, or it would cost a lot of money. Find out what it is and know going in, okay, I'm committing to this program for at least 1 semester, I'm committed for 1 year. Know what you're fully committing to, and what the consequences are if you decide to pull out of the program. If you'll have to pay for the curriculum you bought, if you'll have to turn it back in, if they just unenroll you and you send some stuff back. Use the programs that the virtual charters provide you with as tools. Sometimes they'll say, your child has to take this class, do these requirements. And you can look at that same class and say, okay, I don't really care about that. For example, my daughter had to do a world geography class this year. She's pretty familiar. We've done where she studied countries that she was interested in, so I didn't really care if she had a full world geography class. But she needed to gain the confidence that she could take multiple choice questions, read something and answer questions about it, that she could do discussion boards, that she could write short answer questions, that she could send an email to someone and get a response back if there was a question wrong. Those were skills that she learned through taking that class that had nothing to do with the geography she learned. And so when she would come to me and I would spend my time with her, okay, there was a question that you got wrong and you think your answer's right. How do you write an email to your teacher that nicely says, this question's wrong, and on page 50 of my book, it says this, which shows that I chose the right answer. That's a skill that I wanted her to learn that had nothing to do with world geography. And then look at how these classes can make your life easier. With a lot of kids, I have limited amount of time, so sometimes for her to do world geography online, that was great. So she did a geography and a science online, and the rest of the classes I took care of at home. That was a good fit for her. I had a fourth grader who he also did science and geography online, or Idaho history. He absolutely hated the fact that there were firm deadlines that he couldn't say, but Mom, we had a funeral last week. I wasn't able to do my school. So he learned some great time management skills because he had to learn about deadlines, which was something that I'm not great about being super firm with. The virtual schools often pay for some other things as well. For example, it paid for internet. Well, internet is something that whether I do virtual schools or not, I'm going to have internet in my home. So I told my husband, we need to keep internet in our budget. We're paying for internet. They'll reimburse me for the internet, but I want to use that for something extra they won't pay for. I used it for a long time to pay a cleaning person to come in once a month and Mom clean my bathrooms. It was so nice that she'd be cleaning and when I'd be frustrated, I'd be like, yes, but I jump through these hoops and my bathrooms get cleaned once a month. I could be scrubbing my bathrooms right now. And it just kind of took off some of the pressure of, it's okay. One concern a lot of families have about the virtual schools is they say, but what about testing? Testing is a one-day snapshot. If you go and take a one-day snapshot of my daughter's bedroom, it might look great one day, it might look not so great another day. It's a snapshot, not a this is who you are. I think as homeschool moms, sometimes we start to feel like it's testing us. Did I teach well enough? Am I doing well enough? And there again, it's important to remember that you're their mom. Maybe the testing will show an area that you say, oh, you know what? I did forget to teach you the rock cycle. We'll throw that in. But maybe you already know that they struggle with math. So when the testing says, your child struggles with math, oh, well, already knew that. And you can move on. With my kids, we make it super positive and super fun from the time they're little. It's a test day today. That means you take your test, we go out for ice cream, and you don't have to do any other work the rest of the day. They love and look forward to test days because most of the tests take a few minutes or maybe a few hours as they get older, but they get a free day the rest of the day. And focus on that you're doing the test. I care about you doing this and learning to take a test, not what your score is. When you do something new, the first time you do it, it's really scary. The second time, it's not as scary. The third or fourth time, it starts to feel like a piece of cake. I can do this. So when they go to take the big test that I do care about, like the ACT, that, well, if you want to go this path and get scholarships, that one matters a little more. By then, they're super comfortable with taking the tests, and they go into it with the confidence of, tests are great, this is good. So for my family, we've even been able to turn testing into a positive. It's also allowed my kids to do dual credit classes in high school, paid for by the virtual charter school. You can do dual credit classes with kids in high school, at a very discounted rate. The CWI Up by Us, I think it's $65 a credit versus a normal $250 or $260 per credit. So you can still get access to those college classes while you're in high school, but the virtual charters let me have somebody else pay for that first year of college for my son. And all he had to do was take the standardized test at the end of the year because his dual credit classes were all online classes. They'll also often pay for things like season passes to museums and zoos. We've had piano lessons, gymnastics, horseback riding, rec center passes, all sorts of extras that have been paid for. And I sat down and figured it out before, and I figured that my time that I spend jumping through the hoops ranges from my paycheck for my part-time job. The value of that, I figure, is generally between $30 and $60 an hour based on the time I put in with the resources that I get back out. And I'm willing to take it for that, especially where it's flexible around my family, and a good bit of that time is working with my kids to help them learn to jump through the hoops and navigate that as well. In addition, on my handout, when they talked about the budget, my budget, you've got money budget, and you've also got a time budget. And so one of the things that I have, reasons I have sought out free and online resources is because it allows me to delegate some of what I need to teach to a computer program or to somebody else. So most of the items that I listed, the resources that I put on my handout, are free. The ones that are not have stars by them, but they're ones that I have felt are worth the $3 to $7 for the app that they cost, because those have been worth the money. I'm just going to let you browse through those and look at them for what you're interested in, but I'd like to hit on four of them quickly and how we use them. So one of them is called funforthebrain.com. This is basically flashcards disguised as a game. The penguin walks into the ice cream shop. He's thinking of a math problem. Which flavor of ice cream does he want? You can select it to do a specific set of facts. You can do multiplication, division. It's a great, easy way for my kids to practice those math facts and get them solid. Some Dog is another math practice disguised as a game, as is Prodigy. Both of those have a paid version and a free version. We only use the free version, and we actually use those as rewards. When you finish your school for the day, you can spend 30 minutes on Some Dog or Prodigy. So my boys, Prodigy, for example, you're a little creature guy and you're fighting these battles, but to shoot, you have to solve a math problem. And it's kind of like the Pokemon where your energy goes down. But so they'll sit and they'll answer 40 or 50 math problems, and it adjusts to their level after they've done their school because they're playing their computer game time. The last one that we use every day pretty much is Spelling City, because I hate the idea of spelling workbooks where out of your list of 15 words, there's two that you don't know, and you're spending all of your time practicing this 15 list of words for the two you don't know. So what we've done is we take a list of words online. It's Rebecca Sitton's 1,200 words. It's a list of words that are in order of how frequently they're used in the English language. And I pretest my kids. And we'll start at word number one and work our way through a batch until I have about 25 words that they don't know, and then I'll just draw a line and write their initial on my chart. And then I put together a list in Spelling City where I put in their words once, and then every day they log in and they can play any of the games that are free and practice their spelling words. And then they do this game that's called Test and Teach, which is basically a spelling test, but if you miss the word, it spells it to you and throws it back in your queue to come up again. When they can get 100% on that list 2 days in a row, they move on to their next list. After they've done the five lists that I put together at one time, I'll go back and I will start, if they've done words 100 to 200, I will test them through those words again to make sure there's not a word that we missed the first time that they need to practice, and to make sure they really got the ones that they've practiced. It's the best way I've found for their spelling to really move into their writing and for them to remember it, because it's the words they're using, not a whole list of words that are phonetically ending in A-T. Those words they tend to pick up anyway just from reading and learning the phonics skills. SpellingCity.com is that website. It also has a paid version. We've never used the paid version. There hasn't been a reason to. But it's been one of our favorites that my kids, and so the list of 1,200 words, I've told them, when you master those 1,200 words, you're done with spelling forever, as far as me teaching you spelling, because it pretty much has most of the words they're ever going to use. And if they're going to need a word beyond that, it's going to be a specialty word that they'll pick up. But 1,200 words really covers most of them. So the virtual schools for me have been a way that I've been able to get resources for my family. And then the online activities have been just for saving money, but also for saving time. And so I think now we were going to have everybody come up. And if you have any questions for any of us specifically, we'll just pass the microphone.
The group, and we'll all, if we have something to comment on, then we'll...
Go ahead. You said you jump through hoops.
Uh-huh.
What are those hoops?
It depends on the virtual school what the hoops are. The question was, what are the hoops? For IDEA, for example, my kids have to take a test at the beginning of the year to show where they're at. And then I have to turn in a work sample for each of their core subjects and their electives once a month. With IDEA, I snap a page from their workbook, math workbook, and a math test. I do a picture of science. It can be a science project that they've done. It can be a report, anything that they've done, a social studies sample, and a language arts sample. With the language arts sample, I have to send in a pre-write, a rough draft, and a final draft. It can be a story, a narrative, an opinion paper, whatever, but I have to send in those. For swim lessons, I have to send in a copy of the receipts to get reimbursed and a copy of a form filled out that the instructor signs that basically says, yes, these were the dates the lessons were and the student attended. And then IDEA had them do another test in December that was the same as the one they did in the fall for growth that each one took at about 45 minutes and they did a reading and a math. Then in the spring, they had to do the ISATs, which were 2 days that I took them into Boise to the testing center for about 3 hours. And that was pretty much it for IDEA. Harmony, that I used with some other kids, we did their flex program. So they sent me a packet of 18 worksheets for each of your four core classes. And every 2 weeks, you would turn in one worksheet for language arts, one for math, one for social studies, and one for science. Upload them to the website. Then at the end of the year, you took the standardized test. That was it. Harmony gives you a lot of freedom. They'll give you $800 to buy your curriculum, and then you can keep it at the end of the year, if in Idaho at least, if you have fulfilled your commitment of turning in your worksheets and taking the tests. They'll also pay for a laptop. Again, in Idaho, you can keep it. Each program is a little bit different, and so it's just reading the website, and a lot of times you can ask them to give you the information of a mom that's done it for a long time to help you explain what the hoops are and what you're committing to. For the Idaho ones or Harmony, those are the ones I know. Richard McKenna, those were online high school classes where my son did two classes at a time for a six-week chunk and then moved on. He could work as fast as he wanted, and so he was done with high school by April 20th and loved it. Any other questions? Well, thank you all for coming, and... have a great night.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.